The Book of Daniel, an overview by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract. This is an overview of the Book of Daniel, of its contents, including a sketch of its major prophecies, and some practical values for daily Christian living. The Book of Daniel can be divided up into two big pieces. The first six chapters are largely narrative, with some prophecies interspersed. They narrate the life of Daniel from his exile in Babylon up to his old age. The last six chapters are largely prophetic, with only a bit of narrative regarding how each vision came to him. So we look at the mostly narrative section, chapters 1 through 6, and an overview of that would be this. Daniel is trained in royal service, chapter 1. Nebuchadnezzar's image dream, chapter 2. The golden image in the fiery furnace, chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar's tree dream, chapter 4. The handwriting on the wall, chapter 5. And Daniel in the lion's den, chapter 6. Let's look at those in a little bit more detail. Daniel trained in royal service, chapter 1. Daniel is exiled to Babylon as a young boy. He and other Israelites are drafted into training for royal government service. Daniel and his three friends refuse to eat the royal food. Apparently it's not kosher, or what corresponds to that at that particular time. But as a result of their faithfulness here, they find favor with the officials and come to excel in their studies. Chapter 2 about Nebuchadnezzar's image. We see here an artist's conception of what that image might have looked like. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream of an unusual image with golden head, silver upper body, bronze lower body, iron legs, and iron and clay feet. Daniel interprets the parts as picturing world empires to come. The golden image in the fiery furnace, chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar has a golden image built, which he commands all to bow down and worship. Daniel's companions, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, refuse to worship the image and are thrown into a fiery furnace. God rescues them in the midst of the fire. Nebuchadnezzar's tree dream, chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar later has a dream in which he sees a mighty tree cut down, leaving only the stump and the roots. And when Daniel was called in to interpret the dream, he says that this dream is a message from God that judgment is to come on Nebuchadnezzar for his pride, and urges Nebuchadnezzar to repent. However, Nebuchadnezzar shortly thereafter does not, and the dream is fulfilled, and Nebuchadnezzar's pride leads to his madness, and then after some years, his recovery. Chapter 5 moves us on some distance after the death of Nebuchadnezzar, and brings us to one of his descendants, Belshazzar. Belshazzar is now the probably second ruler of the empire. We have archaeological evidence that his father, Nabonidus, is the first ruler and is off rebuilding temples. Belshazzar uses the sacred dishware that had been taken from God's temple in Jerusalem and uses it as utensils for having a party on. In the midst of this party, a mysterious message appears, a hand writing on the wall. Plaster the wall. Daniel is eventually called in, and he tells Belshazzar that the message, Mina, Mina, Tikal, Upharsin, means that Belshazzar's empire has been weighed, measured, and found lacking, and that the empire has come to an end. That night, the kingdom is taken by the Medes and the Persians. Daniel in the Lion Den, chapter 6, Daniel is promoted to be one of the chief officers in the Medo-Persian rule of the empire here, and the other leaders are jealous of Daniel and manage to talk the king into passing a rather foolish law that no one is to pray to anyone but the king for the next 30 days, or they will be put to death. Well, Daniel was found out praying to God and brought before the king and accused, and although the king is sorry about all of this, he can't change the law, and Daniel is thrown into a den of lions. But God protects Daniel from the lions, and in the morning he is let out, his accusers are thrown in, and they are devoured. Chapter 7 through 12 of Daniel is mostly prophecy. Begins with Daniel's dream of the four beasts in chapter 7, followed by his vision of ram and goat in chapter 8, his prayer and message of the 70 weeks in chapter 9, his vision of the heavenly man in chapter 10, and then this heavenly man, this angel's message, chapters 11 and 12. The four beasts, chapter 7, recounts for us a vision that Daniel had, in which he sees a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a terrible beast appear. Then he sees a throne scene, in which thrones are set up, and the Ancient of Days takes his seat. The four beasts are judged by the Ancient of Days, and the Son of Man comes and receives a universal kingdom. The interpretation of this dream is given to Daniel. The beasts represent four kingdoms to come, and the throne scene then represents judgment, followed by the eternal kingdom of the saints. In chapter 8, Daniel has another vision of a ram and a goat. He sees a ram with two unequal-sized horns coming and conquering everything all around. And he, in turn, is defeated by a goat with a single prominent horn in the middle of his head. This big horn, however, breaks and is replaced by four smaller horns. The angel tells Daniel that the ram represents the empire of the Medes and the Persians, and apparently the bigger one than the empire, the Persians, the bigger horn, the Persians. The goat represents Greece, and we're not given the details of it. Apparently the big horn represents Alexander the Great, and the little horns the split of his kingdom into pieces after his death. In Daniel chapter 9, we have a prophecy for Daniel called the prophecy of the 70 weeks, or the 77s. Daniel has just learned from the prophecies of Jeremiah that the Babylonian captivity is to last 70 years, and he realizes that 70 years must be nearly up. And so the opening verses of the chapter, Daniel is praying to God and repenting for himself and for Israel. And then God sends an angel with this message of the 77s. The chart at right sketches for you a little bit of how this works. Although the exact numbers used here are the numbers from Sir Robert Anderson's interpretation of the prophecy. I have a different scheme of how this works, though it comes out about the same way, but it does not work on the exact days as this one does, but works with weeks that I think have much better biblical support. Anyway, the message is that 77s have been determined upon Daniel's people and Daniel's holy city, that is the Israelites in Jerusalem, and this begins with a decree to restore and rebuild the city of Jerusalem, and that is, I think, Artaxerxes' decree, although I would date it as being roughly 445 B.C. rather than March 5th, 444 B.C. I would take the weeks to be sabbatical cycles that are used for land use, seven-year periods, rather than taking them to be prophetic years, as Sir Robert Anderson does. But the upshot is still that in the 69th week, the Messiah is cut off. This runs from 28 to 35 A.D. The 7th week, the 70th week, I agree with Anderson, is, I think, still future. Chapter 10 of The Heavenly Man. Oh, I might point out that my sketch of how this works is seen in a couple of other PowerPoint talks here. Jesus, the Testimony of Prophecy and History, would be a good one to see that. And also, one of my research reports deals with this as well, the time of the Messiah. In Daniel chapter 10, we have the vision of the heavenly man. Daniel sees a shining man, and he is terrorized. Couldn't come up with a real good graphic for this, so this graphic looks a little on the Victorian side, perhaps. Is this man Gabriel? Well, we're not told. The man mentions the princes of Greece, Persia and Greece, who seem to be angelic beings who are behind some of the machinations of world empires. And Daniel, the heavenly man, comes with a message for Daniel, which we then see in chapters 11 and 12. The angel's message in chapter 11 and 12 tells about the doings of the coming kings of the north and south, and these appear to involve fairly substantially the kings who are successors in the east to Alexander the Great, the Ptolemies in the south and the Seleucids in the north. This comes down to the king who exalts himself, and this may well indeed be the Antichrist. My own read is that this sequence comes down to Antiochus Epiphanes about 170 B.C., and then jumps to the end time figure who most closely resembles him, who will be the Antichrist. We then get a sketch of the end times, and we are told at the end of this that the wise will understand what is going on at that time. It will be hard to interpret this material until the time the end is reached. Well, that's the end of our very quick overview of Daniel. If we ask ourselves, what are some of the practical values of Daniel's prophecy? There has been a lot of speculation on how to fit all these things together and how to fit them into the Book of Revelation and the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24 and 25 and parallels and that sort of thing. And that is something I believe that needs to be done. The upshot of most of that is what's going to happen out there somewhere, which may or may not be close. Practical values would be, what are we to learn about what we're to do and think today from this? Well, I would suggest one practical value is this, that just as in Daniel's case, in his lifetime, God's people must typically live as a minority in their dispersion period. And for the Christian church, this dispersion period is from the ascension of Christ to his return, I believe. And so, just as God's people must typically live as a minority in their dispersion, we need to know how to do so, and Daniel gives us some examples of how to do that. We, like Daniel, need to do our best in the situation God puts us in. Daniel sought to avoid compromise, but he also sought to do as good a job as he could do, even though he was working for the pagan king Nebuchadnezzar, if you like. So we, like Daniel, need to do our best in the situation God puts us in. We need to ask God for wisdom and judgment on not compromising, but on the other hand, not getting nitpicky in ways that would interfere with our being what he wants to do. We need to use the opportunities that God provides, and Daniel had some spectacular opportunities provided to him, and we see his diligence in seeking to carry them out in a fair way. And, of course, a very practical value of Daniel and of all the prophetic material is that by knowing how everything ends, which is one of the big themes of what we might call eschatological prophecy, we gain strength and encouragement. Just as when we're reading a novel, even if we've never read it before, we may not feel quite as concerned when the hero or heroine is in this or that sort of danger because we know at least enough of how it ends that we know that that person is not going to be snuffed out, if you like. And we can gain that strength and encouragement as well. We know from Scripture that God is working all things together for him, for those who love him. God is going to bring us through if we are clinging to him, and we need not then get uptight and make various compromises we should not make. Well, those are some practical values then of the book of Daniel.